Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of GTI Insights, Global Taiwan Institute's Policy Podcast. My name is Marshall Reed, and I'm a program manager here with GTI.
And I'm Catherine Wagner, an intern at GTI.
And today we're really thrilled to be joined by Dr. Jagannath Panda, the head of the Stockholm Center for South Asian and Indo-Pacific Affairs at the Institute for Security and Development Policy, or ISDP, where he also serves as an editor. In addition to all his work as ISDP, Jagannath also serves as the director for Europe-Asia Research Cooperation at the Yokosuka Council on Asia-Pacific Studies and a senior fellow at the Hague Center for Strategic Studies. He's an expert on China, India, and Indo-Pacific affairs, and is the author of several really fascinating books on a variety of subjects, including India-China Relations, the Korean Peninsula and Indo-Pacific Power Politics, Status Security at Stake, and Indo-Japan-ASEAN Triangularity. Jagannath, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Hey, thanks, Marshall. Thanks, Kat, for that kind introduction. Pleasure talking to you.
Well, Jagannath, we're really excited to have you here to share your perspectives on a really critical topic right now, which is India's approach to China and Taiwan. In recent years, India has really emerged as a crucial player, not just in the Indo-Pacific, but globally. With a rapidly growing economy, a population that is projected to become the largest in the world next year, and a modernizing military, he is really poised to become a global leader. Amid rising threats to global security and increasing uncertainty about the future of the Indo-Pacific region, assessing India's foreign policy approach really is more critical than ever. With all that in mind, we're so glad to have you here to discuss New Delhi's approach to China, Taiwan, and really the broader Indo-Pacific. So just to get started, I'd really like to set the stage a bit. Obviously, India's had a long and complex history with both the People's Republic of China and Taiwan. For listeners who might not be as familiar with India's foreign policy, can you provide a little bit of background on Delhi's approach to both Beijing and Taipei?
Well, this is a very interesting question to start with. And I think in order to understand Delhi's approach to both People's Republic of China and Republic of China, that is, People's Republic of China, that is mainland China, and Republic of China, that is Taiwan. I think we need to visit to the history. And I think here, I must make this point at the outset that historical episode has been a strong barrier between India-China, India-Taiwan, and India-China-Taiwan triangular complexity. And I think there we need to go into the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. And I think I'll start with late 1930s, when actually India's then tall leader, Jawaharlal Nehru, visited mainland China. And, since that time, there was an interactive formulation started between Chiang Kai-shek, the head of the, nationalistic party that time, and between Nehru. But what we saw in later years, after 1930s and 40s, that, India gained independence in 1947-48 and eventually established its, sovereign constitution in 1950s. Almost at the same time, People's Republic of China also was established. But what we saw is that Chiang Kai-shek coming to Taiwan and, founding the Republic of China, that is the Taiwan, as the founding head of the KMT, he escaped to, Taiwan. And in subsequent years, what we saw that there was a good chemistry happening between the independent India, that is the People's Republic of India, and the People's Republic of China. But the relationship between Nehru and Chiang Kai-shek was not really normal. And I think that was the starting point about this complexity. On the one hand, we saw that there was a good chemistry between Nehru and Mao Zedong, including Chou Enlai. On the other hand, Nehru's relationship with Chiang Kai-shek was not in order, even though Nehru and Chiang Kai-shek's relationship was very good in the late 30s and early 40s. So the post-independence India's relationship with China improved, whereas, India's relationship with Taiwan, the Republic of China, was not really in good order under Chiang Kai-shek. But what we also saw gradually, India's relationship with China, that is the People's Republic of China, deteriorated after the Ponsil Agreement, the five principles of coexistence, was signed between Nehru and Chou Enlai. 1954. And I think after that, we know that there was a war happened and China attacked India in 1959. Dalai Lama came to India, escaped to India. And then the relationship between India and China deteriorated. And eventually, PLA attacked India in 1962. There was a war between China and India, and the relationship between India and China got spoiled. So the history has its own fault when we talk about India-China-Taiwan trilateral or the triangularity politics. So therefore, when we're talking about India's or Delhi's approach towards China and Taiwan, we need to have this historical context and background in perspective. But we know for a fact that even though there was war between China and India in 1962 and China decided to attack India, India actually eventually, you know, supported the People's Republic of China as the for the permanent membership in the United Nations Security Council. And India did not actually support the entry of the Republic of China, ROC, to the United Nations Security Council. And I think that was the key defining moment in the history. And India's support to the People's Republic of China in 1971 for the United Nations Security Council permanent membership was on the condition and a virtual understanding with mainland China that mainland China would also help India to become eventually a permanent member of the United Nations Security Council. So therefore, history suggests that India supported China's entry into the UNSC as a permanent member, but mainland China did not really support India in the subsequent years. And I think since the war happened in 1962, the relationship between India and China has always been complex. It has been always in ups and downs. So that has been the historical episode. Why today Delhi cannot really have that absolute confidence over China? But in the subsequent years, even though India did not really support Republic of China to become the legitimate government of one China, to become a part of the United Nations Security Council, but still, India's relationship with the Republic of China has improved substantially, even though for a brief period under the Chiang Kai-shek leadership, the relationship between India and Republic of China was not in order. But still today, I think there is a functional official relationship exists between India and ROC, and that has to be kept in mind. And I think this relationship witnessed a steady progress in 1995, when actually there was a official relationship was established without any diplomatic credence between India and Taiwan, that is India and the Republic of China. Actually, India had a India-Taipei association in Taipei, which is working as a de facto embassy. And on the Taiwan part, they established, you know, the Taipei Economic and Cultural Center in New Delhi, which is acting as a de facto Taiwan embassy in India. So even though there is no diplomatic credence between India and Taiwan, but there is an India-Taipei association in Taipei exists, and then Taipei Economic and Cultural Center exists in New Delhi. And that talks about the official relationship between India and Taiwan today. So therefore, from the history and today, there is a lot of historical complexity which defines New Delhi's approach towards mainland China and Taiwan, and that should not be overlooked when we are talking about India-Taiwan relations or India-China relations.
2022 has been really something of a transformative year on the international stage. Obviously, the most pressing development has been Russia's invasion of Ukraine. How has the invasion impacted how India approaches its foreign policy? And more specifically, has it influenced Delhi's approach to Beijing?
Well, this is really a fascinating question in the current context, to which many scholars will hold different opinion in terms of reading Delhi's approach towards China, as well as Delhi's approach towards a whole gamut of complex issues that, you know, Russia's invasion of Ukraine has created. And I think it has to be understood in a broader context of Indian foreign policy. And Indian foreign policy since independence of India has been very carefully orchestrated not to take any side in terms of formulating in or being a part of any alliance exercises. And I think that has been one of the defining aspects of Indian foreign policy. And therefore, what we see today is that India maintains some kind of non-aligned framework in its foreign policy, not to be, you know, taking a side explicitly when it comes to acting against another, you know, other country. And therefore, today we see that even though Indian foreign policy is much more autonomous, much more independent, much more neutral, but still there is a kind of alignment politics, alignment element visible in Indian foreign policy. And this alignment element is to actually take side on issue-to-issue basis rather than on a grand ideological basis. And therefore, what we see today in Indian foreign policy is a kind of alignment-based politics minus alliance. So we can define Indian foreign policy by saying India follows a foreign policy of alignment minus alliance. That means we do not subscribe to any alliance partnership. So therefore, we do partners with US when it comes to Indo-Pacific region. We do partner with Russia and China when it comes to, you know, the Eurasian politics, when it comes to the economic partnership, when it comes to the multilateral politics in the Eurasian regions, but not necessarily we endorse each of these powers' political actions in those regions, or we become an alliance partner with these partners. And I think that explains about Indian foreign policy. And when it comes to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, I think India has taken a nuanced position that has to be understood in the context of Indian foreign policy and India's national interest. As I mentioned, Indian foreign policy has always been alignment-based minus alliance politics, and therefore Russia's partnership has been a factor here. But at the same time, India has officially reacted to the Russia's invasion of Ukraine by calling that the violence should be stopped. And India has not endorsed the war activities between the two countries. On the other hand, India has also maintained a very nuanced position in terms of not also overtly criticizing or indulging in itself to take a position on the Russia-Ukraine war. And that has been misperceived, misread in a wider international context, where many analysts and scholars, they have seen India's position being politically influenced by Russia, or they have seen India's position very debatable and conflictual. Whereas India has seen its own interest with Russia in order, and therefore India has not been overtly critical on Russia's invasion of Ukraine. For example, India has factored its energy and oil imports from Russia. India has factored its defense partnership with Russia because, as we know, that India purchases almost 60% of the military equipments from Russia. So these have been critical factors in behind India's decision why India has not been really overtly critical of Russia's military actions. Also, another factor which has actually influenced India's decision making not to indulge too much in the Russia-Ukraine war and not to also criticize too much Russia on the war, primarily because Russia has been a critical multilateral support to India when it comes to China. In fact, balancing China and creating a pressure on China has been one of the fulcrum of India-Russia partnership. If we see about Russia's partnership with India, there is a Shanghai Cooperation Organizations where both the countries have supported each other to balance out the Chinese influence within the Shanghai Cooperation Organizations. Similarly, when we talk about Asia Infrastructure Investment Bank, we know for a fact that China is the biggest voting shareholder. China has been main propounder of the AIIB. But behind China, Russia and India are the two largest voting shareholders. So therefore, there is a special chemistry exists between Russia and India within the AIIB. Similarly, when we talk about the BRICS formulations, Russia and India supports each other to balance out the Chinese dominance within the BRICS forums and within the New Development Bank, which is an outfit of the BRICS. So there are a range of multilateral formulations where Russia and India supports with each other, and their partnership actually balances out the Chinese influence in those formulations. And therefore, India's position on the Russia-Ukraine war is somewhat influenced by all of these calculations, which we should not actually be overlooking into, because these are the critical elements which influences India's decisions as well as Russia's decisions in terms of balancing out China and also checking out China's dominance in some of these organizations, including China's dominance in South Asian regions as well as in the Eurasian regions.
We're talking about, that's great. As Kat mentioned earlier, I mean, 2022 really has been one of the more eventful years in recent memory in terms of foreign policy developments. Besides the obvious specter of the war in Ukraine, there's also the ongoing aftermath of U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan in August, which obviously set off a series of escalating diplomatic and security disputes that have culminated in several provocative PLA military exercises in the vicinity of Taiwan. Be interested to hear, have these developments influenced the Modi administration's views on the Taiwan Strait and its approach to China? And if so, how?
Well, if we see objectively, Taiwan issue does not directly matter to India or India's security concerns. But we know for a fact that the way the geopolitics of the regions is emerging, the way the Indo-Pacific power politics is unfolding, the way the Chinese aggressiveness and assertiveness on a lot of sovereignty and territorial integrity aspects is expanding, I think it becomes a concern for many countries in the regions, including India. And therefore, India has taken a note of the Chinese aggression and Chinese assertiveness when it comes to the Taiwan issue. But when it comes to, I think, U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan, and I think, yes, the issue is not entirely or directly linked with India's security thinking. But I think it goes without saying that Delhi would be, you know, watching all of the developments that is arising post Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan when it comes to the mainland China and Taiwan relationship, or let's say the cross-strait ties. And I think that should interest many countries in the regions, including India, primarily because we know for a fact that the China's economic coercion and China's military coercion is expanding from time to time. And keeping that in mind, I think Delhi would be worried. Rather, Delhi would be concerned to prepare for a future contingency, how to deal with this Chinese aggression from time to time. And I think, therefore, I would say that, yes, Modi government in Delhi would be factoring the recent developments in the Taiwan Strait in Indian foreign policy. And I think if we see in a greater context of Indian foreign policy, there are two aspects needs to be kept in mind. One is, I think if we take into account China's boundary dispute with India, the way the People's Liberation Army and the Chinese officials have treated India over the last 2 to 3 years, particularly from the Doklam incident to the Galwan incident from 2017 onwards, particularly towards the beginning of the Xi Jinping's second tenure as the president of China and as the CMC chairmanship, I think those are problematic trends. And those trends are going simultaneously with an aggressive and assertive China on the Taiwan front. And therefore, there are enough indications for New Delhi and for the Modi administration to link and to correlate the Chinese aggressiveness on the China-India boundary dispute with the Taiwan Strait, the developments in the cross-strait ties on the Taiwan Strait. And therefore, Delhi would be factoring each of the developments in the Taiwan very closely. The second issue is, I think, the way the Chinese are changing the status quo. Status quo on the land border issues, as well as the status quo on the maritime issues. And I think there is a direct correlation, and that should not be overlooked as far as India's perception of China's aggressiveness is concerned, or India's perception of each of those developments in the Taiwan Strait is concerned. For example, if we study the Chinese activities or China's approach to change the status quo on the land issues, land border issues, and on the maritime issues, there is a correlation. For last one decade or so, the Chinese are continuously creating transgressions or incursions on the China-India boundary dispute areas to change the narrative, to change the status quo, and to derail the boundary negotiation process between China and India. The same kind of process, the same kind of strategy is also visible in China's militarization activities in the South China Sea regions, including trying to militarize those small islands in the South China Sea regions. And this links to the Taiwan Strait crisis, because the China's approach towards the whole Taiwan Strait crisis is not really aiming to occupy the Taiwan all of a sudden militarily by force. I think, in fact, the PLA and the Chinese are actually planning for an incremental occupation of Taiwan. And what do I mean by incremental occupation? They want to go step by step in terms of occupying those small island chains in the South China Sea regions and then coming to the Taiwan Strait. And therefore, we see a kind of trend happening of China militarizing those islands in the South China Sea regions and eventually coming to occupy those small islands in the Taiwan Strait. So therefore, the attempt is to change the maritime status quo in the South China Sea dispute and also trying to link it with the Taiwan Strait. The second point here that needs to be understood, that the Chinese are trying to continuously change the status quo when it comes to the land boundary disputes and the maritime disputes with the claimant countries in the South China Sea, including in the cross-strait relations with Taiwan. And so therefore, I think India has reasons to take note of and feel concerned with each of the developments that is happening on the Taiwan Strait. So therefore, just to narrate the entire story, I think Taiwan issue may not be entirely directly be linked with India's security concern, but this is a security development in the regions which does not really completely aloof India from feeling concern. I think each of the developments on the cross-strait ties or on the Taiwan Strait has a indirect linkages with India's security and foreign policy thinking. And therefore, it is obvious that Modi administration's outlook and views on the Taiwan Strait will be influenced from now on.
India has long been a key member of the Quadrilateral Security Dialogue, or the Quad, which also includes Australia, Japan, and the United States. While the grouping was largely ignored for much of the 2010s, it has experienced something of a revival over the past 2 years, with members recently committing to work together towards a quote-unquote free and open Indo-Pacific. First, how invested do you think the Modi administration is in aligning itself with the Quad? And secondly, and perhaps more importantly for this conversation, how do you think the Quad could play a role in the Taiwan Strait?
Well, this is a very relevant question in times to come. But yes, let me first address the first question, which is how do you see the Modi administration aligning itself with the Quad and whether India is going to take interest in Quad? And then I'll come to the question on whether Quad can play ideally a role on the Taiwan Strait or not. I think if we try to see India's approach to the Quad, yes, of course, at the beginning, probably India was a little slow in terms of seeing Quad as a very effective and relevant framework in the Indo-Pacific region. But I think India's perspective with regard to the Quad has seen a continuous progress, and there is an evolution that's happened in India's thinking. And therefore, I would say that since 2017, what we have seen is that India has gradually started seeing Quad as a welcome development in the Indo-Pacific region. And therefore, India has supported, be a part of this dialogue process, be a part of the ministerial dialogue process. Now today we see that, Prime Minister Modi has also attended the Quad meetings among the leadership levels, the summit that has happened. All of these things indicates that India do not want to be seen as a backlaid or a laid-back country who does not really show much serious in terms of supporting to the Quad. In fact, rather what we see is that India is showing a lot of interest in terms of pushing forward the Quad agenda and Quad as a framework. Today, when we see all of these official meetings are happening on the Quad formulations under the Quad grouping, India has proposed some interesting initiatives to discuss within the Quad forums, be it from the new supply chain issues to be a part of the economic nexus, and also to discuss on the critical maritime security issues, including critical issues within the Indian Ocean regions. And that explains the India's interest in terms of getting involved more clearly, more lucidly with the Quad framework. But I think there are enough reasons why there is a little bit doubt at the international level exists that whether India is really serious about Quad or not, primarily because India is not really perceived in the same prism, in the same noting, like the way the other Quad members are usually seen. If we see about the other Quad members, that is Australia, Japan, and the United States, they are actually alliance partners of each other. Whereas India is not really an alliance partner of these countries. India is rather a strategic partner of some of these countries. So I think there has to be this distinction drawn. Even though India is not really an alliance partner, India's interest and involvement in the Quad should not be seen with any doubt or any suspicious term. And I think it goes without saying that now India is a country which is supporting the Quad framework, and India would like to continue its association growing with the Quad. But I think about the second question, whether the Quad could play a role in the Taiwan Strait or not, I think it all depends how the four countries are agreeing, and therefore having a common agenda within the Quad formulations on a critical issue like Taiwan is a key issue to answer this question. Whether the Quad can have a agreed formulation on Taiwan, I don't think so. Because I think the Taiwan issue are seen somewhat differently among the Quad countries from each other, even though we would say that both US and Japan see the Taiwan issue affecting their security or affecting their security interest dearly. If Yele occupies Taiwan, then the security of Japan would be hampered, affected severely. And then, you know, there will be enormous implications for United States strategic command in the Indo-Pacific regions. But I think to have an agreed formulations to protect Taiwan or to provide SIL to Taiwan is a critical issue. So therefore, it all depends whether the Quad countries can agree or not on the Taiwan issue, whether to provide the security to Taiwan or not. And I think there, India might differ with some of these countries. Now, unless we have a agreed formula, I don't think it is going to be very easy to talk about what kind of conditions we are talking about to respond to protect to the Taiwan's cause in future. And I think we know for a fact that the Quad countries don't have a agreed formulations. They don't have an agreed agenda. They are mainly based on a kind of loose framework. Today, the Quad is gaining ground. They are evolving as a framework, as a grouping. There are official meetings are happening, but Quad does not have a agreed agenda. They don't have a constitution per se. They don't have a agreed binding formula within the Quad framework. So I think that would be one of the major problems why Quad cannot act outrightly on the Taiwan Strait. On the other hand, if we draw the lessons from NATO's activism on the Ukraine war, NATO has not really directly interfered on the Ukraine war because NATO does not have an agreed mandate to act on the Ukraine crisis or on the Ukraine war. And we know for a fact that Ukraine is not a member of the NATO. And this has been one of those problematic aspects why NATO was unable to respond to the Ukraine crisis or Ukraine war. And similar kind of structural limitations are visible here. Quad does not have an agreed agenda. Quad does not have a agreed formulations. So therefore, the role of the Quad would be very much limited in terms of responding to the Taiwan crisis. Even though there is a role Quad could play in terms of anticipated role, but then in order to play that anticipated or futuristic role, all the Quad countries has to discuss about the Taiwan issue much more clearly. And I don't think at this moment the Quad countries have actually discussed it in details.
Well, Jagannath, thank you so much for providing so much necessary context to India's approach to both China and Taiwan. I think you've made it really clear that the really key word here is nuance. that India is really trying to walk a difficult line between, you know, its political interests, its economic interests, its security interests. It's been really fascinating to hear so much about how Delhi thinks about these things, how the Modi administration thinks about these things. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
And thank you to all our listeners for joining us for another episode of GTI Insights. Many thanks also to the great staff and interns at GTI for all their help with every step of producing this podcast. If you're interested in learning more about GTI, be sure to check out our website at globaltaiwan.org, where you can find information about our Global Taiwan Brief, our frequent public seminars, and our other podcasts. You can also listen to more episodes of GTI Insights on Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Until next time, this has been GTI Insights.